other and listening to each other, so we might as well start right now by giving each other a nice big hug to start this morning. All right, let's not get carried away with that hug, though.
Members, as much as I appreciate that, we do have business.
A good hug is a great way to start the day. First off, members, I want you all to have Dan Hall's daughter in your prayers. I won't go into any details, but they have a family issue there, and she needs your prayers. So join me in prayer. Father God, as we look for answers to our budget problems and the problems many Minnesotans face, let us look to you and ponder on the words of second chapter of Habakkuk, and hope that you can give us some clear answers through your word. And the Lord said to me, "Write my answer on a billboard, large and clear, so that anyone can read it at a glance and rush to tell the others. But these things I plan won't happen right away. Slowly, steadily, surely, the time approaches when the vision will be fulfilled. If it seems slow, do not despair, for these things will surely come to pass. Just be patient, and they will not be overdue a single day." Lord, that is our prayer, that you would give us the vision for the state of Minnesota, that that vision would not be overdue a single day, and that we would be open as you draw us towards each other and towards that solution, and we give you honor and glory. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States, one nation under God. Thank you very much. Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Anderson, Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingerbretson, Jungbauer, Key, Lash, Cook, Cruz, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogamiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Spark, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
A quorum is present. The second order of the business, executive and official orders or communications, they are printed in today's agenda on pages 1 and over into page 2. Third order of business is messages from the House. The Secretary will read.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of 3 members of the House on amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file. Senate file number 40, a bill for an act relating to education amending teacher licensure provisions. There has been appointed to as such committee on the part of the House Garofalo, Erickson, and Mariani. Senate file number 40 is herewith returned to the Senate. Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no action necessary on that message. Fifth order of business, reports of committee, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion is adopted.
Madam President.
Senator Koch.
I would move that the committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills, second reading. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills, second reading. And those are printed in the agenda. Eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introduction. They will be referred as indicated with one exception. On page one, Senate file 535 will be referred to capital investment. First reading. Ninth order of business under motions and resolutions. We will take those authors' motions as one motion. All those, and they are printed in the Senate agenda on page four. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, the Senate Resolution 46 is referred to rules. Okay. Secretary will read.
Senate Resolution Number 47, a Senate resolution adopting permanent rules of the Senate.
Madam President,
Senator
I would move
Pope.
That Senate Resolution 47 be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate file number 40 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Senator Olson on that motion.
Thank you. I believe the pages are distributing some materials on the Senate file 40 agreement, which is the bill that provides for alternative pathways to teacher licensure. When the bill left the Senate, it was a fairly straightforward, slim bill. When it came back from the House, let me just say that in the House, the only difference between their bill as it came to their floor was that they had changed the reciprocity provision so that it would not have the fiscal impact and the impact of the load to the Board of Teaching. Our bill had removed that provision. But also in the House, between the time that the Senate had acted and the House was acting, we had been working with the governor's office and the commissioner to determine some of the concerns and ways in which we might address those. You will find in the packet that is handed out two pages of some of the issues. There are 12 issues that were of concern and the ways in which they were addressed. About eight of them were addressed in an amendment that Representative Garofalo put on the bill in the House. And that is the way in which it was returned to the Senate. And you may recall that I moved to lay that bill on the table. So it's been resting peacefully there for a couple of weeks as we continued to work. And attached in your folder is an amendment, copy of an amendment, that was some additional accommodations that were made to the governor and the commissioner's concerns. On Monday, you may or may not have missed the motion that I made to send this bill to the conference committee. And we met because the governor had, in fact, replied. Some of you, I think, may have seen the copy of his letter that he was, with the improvements that we had acknowledged and had made, that he would sign this legislation if it's passed by the legislature. So in conference committee, we did adopt the engrossed version that incorporated that amendment. And what you have before you, I don't know if you have copies at your desk or on your computer, is, as a conference committee report, includes the changes that were requested and by the governor and that do any damage to the alternative pathways. We wanted to have a true alternative pathways to licensure bill, not one that just was in name, but really was too tightly linked to the traditional pathway to licensure that would not allow for some of the innovation that is important to have. We have lots of great quality teachers coming out of our current traditional pathways, but we also have a huge achievement gap. And some of these innovative ways are drawing people into the teaching profession by a different means that can help with that charge. So I would urge you to support the conference committee report so that the House can act on it and the governor can sign it. And I want to specifically thank Senator Bonhoff, who has worked on this issue for a couple of years. I have been supporting her, and she has been supporting me as we have come to this day that hopefully we have reached a good, solid policy for the state of Minnesota for an alternative pathways to teacher licensure. I'd be happy to stand for any questions and would urge your support of the conference committee report.
Discussion on the motion to adopt, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I stand in support of the motion, and I would like to acknowledge the leadership of Senator Olson in this process. This has been a long and winding road. We have been attempting to put forward an alternative licensure proposal for the past 3 years. And I think the thing that allowed this to be successful this year was a willingness of all parties concerned to compromise. I think this is an example of what can work in government. Here we had a House that had different views as to how we might go forward with alternative licensure than a Senate. We in the Senate felt as though to have an alternative licensure policy, we really should have it not part of the traditional higher ed path, so that an alternative program really was an alternative program. Yet the House felt that there should be, in some cases, some connection. And that was the view of some of the members last year. In addition, the House wanted to make certain that we put some specific language with regard to teacher evaluation that we hadn't planned to have in our bill. Well, after coming to some compromise between the House and the Senate, of course, the governor, who deferred to the commissioner, also had some pretty significant concerns with our bill. And so that there began that process of give and take. And so I commend and appreciate the work of the governor's staff, in particular Commissioner Casilius. Commissioner Casilius is passionate about her responsibility and her commitment for each and every child in our schools to have an excellent and outstanding education. And so her concerns centered around oversight, making sure that we safeguarded those teachers in our classrooms. And so I think you'll find that the compromise language in the bill before you has the right balance. It says that if a program, after being in Minnesota, is not being effective, it gives the Board of Teaching the authority to remove it. It also requires that the alternative licensure programs and our institutions of higher ed share best practices on a formal basis, which is something the commissioner, again, was adamant about. So I would urge your support, because while nobody ever in a compromise gets 100% of what they want, when a compromise is really effective is when every side gives and the final outcome is actually better than where we started. And I think that's true of this bill. This bill is actually, I believe, a much stronger bill for our children and for our schools than when we began, and that was because it was a team effort. So I would ask members to give this one a chance. I know when Senator Pogemiller and others first began working on charter schools, there was a lot of resistance. People were concerned about the direction and what impact it might have on our regular school community. And yet now we see that charter schools have flourished side by side with our regular public public schools and have contributed greatly to the education of our children. I believe that we will look back on alternative licensure in much the same way, and we will see that these alternative programs will not take the place of our traditional programs, but in fact complement and be one more tool as we go forward to tackle the challenges in our complex education system going forward.
Further discussion on the motion to adopt the conference committee report. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to share some real serious concerns over the process that this bill went through. You know, this bill passed the Senate weeks ago, and I heard Senator Olson say that it rested peacefully. Peacefully. Well, people behind closed doors, away from the public, the governor's office, the commissioner of education, Education Minnesota, advocates for the bill, behind closed doors, out of the eyes of the public, worked on the provisions. Members, I think that's a problem. In our democracy, we should have an open process. And over my tenure here, conference committees have always been open to the public so that other members could come and observe or maybe watch on television. Members of the public could watch on television from home or come and sit in the hearing room and listen to the discussion so that we all would understand people's positions and understand what kind of trading was done back and forth to reach some final agreement between the parties and what it is that the governor felt he might have gotten here that he was willing to sign the bill. The process is broken, members. When we took this up and sent it over to the House put in their language and sent it back. The bill should have went to the conference committee. It shouldn't have rested peacefully while people negotiated for weeks behind closed doors on what the final language we were going to see was here today. And even more problematic is Monday we made a decision to finally send it to conference committee. Apparently an agreement's been reached out of the public view, and we made a decision Monday to send it to conference committee. All of us, I think, understanding that later in the week, the agreement would finally be consummated into a conference committee report, be signed, and be back here in the Senate. But Monday, when we made that decision to go to conference, why didn't a notice go out and say when the conference committee was going to meet? You know, the joint rules on conference committees between the House and the Senate say, to the extent practicable, we'll give 24-hour notice when a conference committee is going to meet. That didn't go out on Monday when we made a decision to go to conference. I've got the email from the Education Committee, and it went out at 8:07 a.m. on Tuesday, and it announced that the conference committee was going to meet at 10 o'clock. Members, how is the public going to participate in this process? How is somebody supposed to know, be sitting at their computer waiting for that notice to come out at 8:07, that at 10 o'clock was going to be their opportunity, the only opportunity they were going to get, to come and testify on the provisions in the conference committee that had been talked about for weeks behind closed doors? Now, somebody, please, it would be helpful if somebody could be supply me with an email that the public had some idea this conference committee was going to happen in less than 2 hours. Please, somebody tell me that something went out the day before, the night before, so that the members of the public had some idea there was going to be a discussion that they should prepare to come to the Capitol to register their input on what the provisions in the final deal that was all made behind closed doors were. I mean, that's all I want. I mean, this is going to be a bipartisan vote on this. But members and the new majority, let's please involve the public in the discussion on these kind of things. This is a significant change in state policy, and it may well be a good idea. But the public has a right to participate. You know, and governors have extraordinary power. They get to put provisions together on their own. But it's when the legislature takes up changes in law is where the public's opportunity to participate comes in. That's what committee tables are about. And I'm just troubled by the fact that we had no conference committee process, all closed room discussions. I never had an opportunity to hear what the Commissioner of Education thought, what kind of exchange was going back and forth. Neither did anybody else in the public. So I'm troubled by the process. I'd like to ask the majority, let's be more respectful of the public's opportunity to participate in this conference committee process as we move forward, because they certainly have a right to know, and I think we need to know what the differing opinions are on the part of the public before we cast a red or a green vote here today.
Senator Michel.
Thank you, Madam President, and I'm sorry Senator Bach does not share my belief that today we should be celebrating. This bill that Senator Olson and Senator Bonoff and many other members have worked on over the last several years, I can't imagine a more public process that we have been through to talk about alternative pathways for teachers, hours of committee hearings. This should be Exhibit A for how we get things done in the 2011 session. Senator Olson deserves a medal for the work that has gone into this. She has been incredibly open. Her office, her committee, this issue, working with the House, working with the governor, working with a new commissioner. So, members, this should be something you all feel very proud of. This is one of the premier products that is going to come out of the first 2 months of the legislative session before we get going hard on the budget. And so I stand today to say congratulations to Senator Olson. I stand today to say congratulations to Senator Bonoff and to the governor. And to the governor. This is a good thing we're doing today.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Michel. I appreciate that, and Senator Bonoff for your comments. And to Senator Bach, you know, I'd rather not say this, but our bills had open committee hearings, and it wasn't until after we had passed our bill on the floor and the House was getting ready to take action that the governor's office raised many of these concerns, and the commissioner did. It was after the process of preparing and trying to address them, the House had open debate on that when they added most of those to that bill. I raised the issue. I had some concerns about making substantial changes. But, you know, we're all adjusting to new roles, and that includes the governor and the commissioner. And I have talked with her about it. I said, please, when you see bills or see that issues are scheduled on our committee, let us know. If you have concerns, we're open. We want to discuss this. We want you to be a part of the process, and it is far better. It would be far better if it had been a part of that discussion along the way in the development of this bill. We had come too far to just discard it at that point, and the procedural tools we had, one, were to let it rest for a while when it came back from the House, so that there was time to be sure. We wanted to be sure that the governor's office was comfortable because we wanted him to sign the bill. I think he wanted a bill he could sign. We all win by this. And so maybe there are some aspects of it that were not quite as orthodox as they should be, but I believe that the outcome is one that if you look at it, we can be very, very satisfied that this is a pathway for quality people to be part of the education of our children. And so I would urge your support of it. And I believe that we will, ongoing, this has been a good learning experience, and I think that there's going to be more engagement as we proceed, hopefully with other significant, and we know in many major areas, between the governor's office, the House, and the Senate. And that includes majority as well as minority. We're all having challenges with our adjustments, and I have great sympathy as well as empathy. So thank you very much for the work that all of you and the support that you have given, and I hope that you will take this, support the governor in his signing of the bill, and let's move on.
Further discussion, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. I fully recognize this will be law soon. However, for the record, I oppose what is before us. I want to commend those Senator Olson and others for their hard work, and I sincerely hope this does work. I, however, do not think it's rigorous enough, and I think it is somewhat insulting to the over 50,000 teachers that have gone through rigorous programs with the classroom training instruction, as opposed to a 5-week course where you could go through this. Also, it gives lip service to the linkage with higher education. It requires consultation with higher education, but does not require a formal link. We have 32 higher education programs in Minnesota that are working hard on this, and we need to continue that strong relationship and not have a consultation. I do not think the 5 weeks is enough. However, I want to say that I'm very impressed with Teach for America, but this goes beyond Teach for America. A couple of years ago when we started on this, I had amendments which would have limited to that, but this could be any group. So the Teach for America program does an outstanding job. They do the follow-up, and I'd like to see that ongoing mentoring for everyone, but it's beyond just Teach for America. So with those concerns, I'm not able to support the provision. I compliment Senator Olson and others for the compromise. It's better. You have to have a B average now, among other things. But I would submit for classroom teachers now, the over 50,000, that they have gone through a more rigorous training program.
Further discussion, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard so much about how great, or Madam President, I'm sorry, how great this bill is, but this, in my opinion, does nothing to cure the systemic problems that we have in education, and in fact may make them worse. It's a little bit to me like trying to give an aspirin to cure diabetes, because what we have is in our society is a real problem with the way we treat teachers and the expectations that we have of them. We force federal, state, local rules on them. We have parents that get angry with teachers if they don't give their children a good enough grade. We have national media criticism. If you had to go to work every day under these conditions, how long could you be energetic and effective? And yet, this is a big problem. I think what's happening here is we're saying that somehow people that get a 5 or 6 week training and get all revved up about teaching are going to be able to go out there and cure our achievement gap. I don't think that's possible, because those same folks will go into these same systems and they'll have the same problems. And I've heard a lot of these teachers that come out of Teach of America last a couple of years, and I guess I'm surprised they even last that. I think what we really need is to start having a much better opinion of our teachers, treating them like the important people they are that teach our students, and stop thinking that we can cure these problems with a little aspirin or something that is going to be maybe give a short-term solution to a very systemic problem. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this compromise legislation. And to Senator Goodwin's point, no, this is not a silver bullet. Unfortunately, we don't have silver bullets for lots of the large problems that are facing us today. However, this is one step in the right direction. It does allow for an additional alternative pathway for teachers to enter the esteemed profession of teaching. And might I say, it's a future-changing profession. Teachers do touch the future. And members, this is just one opportunity for teachers who are prepared in an alternative manner to actually receive a license and apply for a job. This does not in any way indicate that there is already a job there. It is an opportunity to apply, and we leave it up to our locals, our local superintendents and school boards, to pick the best candidates. And this is a very bipartisan measure. It was long discussed way before I even got here. There's been a great deal of discussion and public input on this bill, and it is very bipartisan. In fact, you may remember that Minnesota was chided publicly by President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, for not having an alternative licensure pathway. I encourage a green vote on this, members. Not only will it be good for students, it will also improve diversity within our teaching staff and improve academic achievement along the way. I encourage a green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Olson renews her motion to adopt the conference committee report on Senate File 40. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 40 its third reading.
Conference Committee Report on Senate File Number 40 relating to education amending teacher licensure provisions, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 40. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 46 ayes and 19 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I would designate the following bill be made a special order for immediate consideration, Senate File Number 47.
Senator Koch has designated Senate File 47 a special order. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 47 is the federal conformity provision that would allow for health care coverage for adult children up through age 26 to be excluded from taxable income. This bill is important, members, because we have taxpayers now preparing tax statements for 2010. This is a provision that would allow for a different treatment once it's passed. And so, members, I would ask us to pass Senate File 47, but, Madam President, I would like to offer the A-10 amendment, which would add additional conformities to the provision before it's voted on.
Senator Ortman offers the A-10 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senate File 47, an amendment, dependent health care coverage exclusion of dependent adult children. This is the A-10 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members will recall that we have already acted on most of these conformity provisions when we took up Senator Roebling's bill. So we do have a Senate position in favor of the conformity amendment that I'm offering today. It includes just generally, very quickly, members, the employer-provided adoption assistance credit, It allows individuals age 70 and a half or older to transfer to IRA and Roth IRA directly with some favorable tax treatment, conservation easements. There are some depreciation and expensing provisions. It does include the higher education tuition credit and the educator classroom expense deduction that the governor specifically has been asking us to pass as well. So, members, that's just a very brief summary, but there is
Madam President,
spreadsheet that's been passed out that would also include all of these provisions. So that's been passed out. It has my name on it, Madam President.
Further discussion to the A-10 amendments. Senator Michel.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Ortman. Madam President, I'd like to offer the A-11 amendment,
Senator
which
Michelle.
Amends the Ortman A-10.
Senator Michel has offered the A-11 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Michel moves to amend the Ortman amendment to Senate file number 47 as follows, page 1 after line 2. This is the A-11 amendment.
To the A-11 amendments, Senator Michel.
Madam President and members, this is Governor Dayton's tax recommendations. This is Governor Dayton's tax plan. It reflects the governor's changes that he has talked about since the forecast and after his press conference. So members, we offer this today because, of course, the Senate doesn't actually have a bill in front of it. We still do not have a bill that reflects the governor's budget or the governor's tax plan. In fact, today in the tax committee, we asked Commissioner Showalter, where's the bill, where's the legislative language, and he said that we would not likely see something until March 17th or 18th. So members, we need to get going on the budget. And so we want to get a sense of the Senate and have a little discussion this morning, get a Senate position on the governor's tax plan. So members, Senator Ortman will speak to this, but we've had finance committee hearings on this budget and tax plan. We've had tax committee hearings, multiple hours, on this proposal. So these issues have been thoroughly reviewed. At least in the press, we received word of what the governor wants to do 2 weeks ago. So members, there's a spreadsheet that is being handed out with my name on it. So this amendment would put before the body the governor's tax increase. So this raises $2.4 billion that he believes is critical to addressing the state budget. So I'll be clear, members. I'm offering it, but I will oppose it. I will oppose this amendment. But I think it's important that we have a little bit of discussion on the Senate floor now. This is the ninth week of the legislative session, members. We have, am I right, Senator Lee? We have 81 days to go. 81 days, members, to put together a budget. 81 days until May 23rd. I also heard this morning, this is pretty amazing, in 35 days, the Twins have their home opener at Target Field. So winter is almost ending, believe it or not. So we need to get going. As you know, we've set some aggressive committee targets. We're waiting for the governor's budget bill and details, but we can't wait any longer. We have to at least start the discussion, members. We've had some of this in committee. Let's have some more of it on the Senate floor this morning.
Discussion on the amendment to the amendment, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I welcome the discussion today. The governor's tax proposals are uppermost in Minnesotans' minds. The budget deficit is uppermost in Minnesotans' minds. They want us to begin to address this. And I believe that the governor's tax proposals are exactly wrong for Minnesota in a number of ways. Now, the governor would say that today's vote will be a charade. I disagree. I would say that the governor's tax provisions are based on pure fiction. The governor has argued that he wants to tax the wealthy and he wants to protect the middle class. Members, that is a complete fiction if you actually look at the budget pages he provided us and you do a little bit of work as we have done in the Tax Committee. We have had multiple hours. We've heard testimony pro and con. We've had Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Revenue go over every one of the provisions meticulously, and we've had economists come to the committee to evaluate these proposals. I'll just point out a couple of things. We have a $5 billion deficit. Half of it, the governor would raise in new taxes, $2.4 billion. It would be a 39% increase in income for the top payers in Minnesota, a 23% increase in business taxes. It also includes sales taxes, property taxes, rental car taxes, insurance premium taxes. And I know there are others that will address many of these different provisions. I would like to just speak today, for now, about the individual income tax and the devastating effect that 10.95 tax rate would have in Minnesota. Let me begin, Madam President, by saying that it would be among the highest in the nation. We know that Oregon and Hawaii have higher rates currently at 11%, and Governor Dayton proposes 10.95%. But let's dig into that just a little bit. Because in Oregon and in Hawaii, those rates begin at income levels much higher than the governor proposes. I've handed out a chart that will compare us. In Hawaii, their 11% rate applies at $200,000 for joint filers. In Oregon, at $250,000. Governor Dayton's proposal would begin at $150,000. And because we begin our taxes at much lower income levels, we actually have higher collection rates. So our number two will actually be the highest collections of individual income taxes at that rate in the nation. It is a fiction to say that we will be protecting the middle class from the wealthy. The Senate fiscal staff has prepared an analysis, Madam President. It's dated 2/24/2011, and it shows that Governor Dayton's proposal would actually impose that 10.95% on all income earners in the state of Minnesota within 15 years, because the governor doesn't index the top bracket. That means that over time, everybody moves in to the 10.95% tax bracket. Members, you can't seriously believe that every income earner in the state of Minnesota should pay taxes at a rate of 10.95%. Seriously. Seriously. And then to argue that it is somehow more progressive? Let me just say that the top 5% in Minnesota already pay 41% of the income taxes that we raise in the state of Minnesota. 41%. While 23% of all Minnesota adults do not pay any income tax. In fact, at that lowest rate, we have the most progressive income tax in the nation. When you look at all the comparisons, Minnesota is a high-tax island. Let me just say that we are already the fifth highest in collections and income tax, third highest in corporate taxes, seventh highest in sales taxes, and 14th highest in property taxes. This is not a good position for the state of Minnesota to be even considering tax increases when we are trying to grow out of the economic recession. We are trying to have investment in the economy and savings in the economy. We want Minnesotans to keep more of their hard-earned income because they know how to spend it more wisely than government every single day of the week. And we had testimony today that the marginal cost of collecting those dollars is actually more than the dollar received by government. And there's dead weight loss. There's loss in collecting those dollars. The economist also told us that we should truly be suspicious of any revenue estimate that would suggest that we would actually raise the $2.4 billion that the governor is relying on. Because income earners in those ranges have more options to defer. They have more options to transfer their income, to not take income, to not engage in the transactions that would generate the very income that he's relying on. We also heard that the capital gains revenue, if you remember, which is fueling our economy, is in jeopardy if we actually increase the taxes to 10.95%. Members, we need this revenue in the economy, not in the government. We need investment. We need to attract high-skilled labor. It's hard to do that when we have income tax rates that don't compete. When the engineers who graduate from the University of Chicago, when the scientists graduate from Cal or Berkeley, we want them to come here and come work for our big economic generators in the state of Minnesota, but they can't attract those folks to come fill those jobs because they get better tax treatment in other states. It's hard to attract innovators, new business, new expansion. And be very clear, members, this individual income tax has a huge impact on business investment because 72% of our businesses are taxed as S corporations and as pass-through corporations, and they are taxed not on the corporate income tax, but on the individual income tax. Members, we already have a very progressive tax system. This would be a terrible mistake. It'd be shocking to think that you could actually support this. After all the work that we have done in this legislature over the last 8 years I've been here to understand that you can't tax your way out of economic recession, that we need to lower taxes, not raise them, in order to generate the growth that we need. And to think that we can just send another bill to the taxpayers to pay for 22% increases in spending is irresponsible. It reads like a good novel, but it's not good policy. Members, I urge you to vote no on Governor Dayton's proposal and send a message to him that he's on the wrong track.
Further discussion, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I stand in opposition today of the A11 amendment. Governor Dayton's tax increase will punish the very people who will provide the private sector jobs that Minnesota needs to grow out of this recession. In fact, his $2.4 billion proposal is the largest tax increase ever proposed by a Minnesota governor. Many of the people who will be affected by this fourth tier tax bracket have companies that are S-Corps and LLCs, so this new high tax bracket will negatively affect their abilities to remain competitive in our state. In fact, according to some 2005 data, 22% of all tax returns and 72% of all Minnesota businesses are S-Corps or partnerships or LLCs. This will negatively affect their ability to provide the jobs that we need here in Minnesota. So if you combine our high tax rate here in Minnesota with the federal tax rate, we'll have people that are going to be paying out over 50% of their income to the government. That does not provide us jobs. That does not provide Minnesota the economic opportunity that we need to grow our economy, to shrink our budget deficits. You know, I've been sitting on the tax committee now for about 8 weeks, and we have heard company after company after company come talk to us about if we don't make it easier to do business here in Minnesota, that they won't be doing business here in Minnesota. So these tax increases are taking us the exact opposite way we need to go. Minnesota will become a high-tax island, and that will make us even less competitive with our neighbors and our bordering states and even the whole country. All one has to do is look at the cities on the border of our state, especially those next on the west side of the Red River, and compare those to the east side of the Red River, and we will see that North Dakota has grown their economy while those border cities on the east side of the Red River have remained stagnant. The incentive to be successful, grow businesses, and hire people will be diminished with these onerous tax rates. Lower taxes, not higher taxes, is the medicine this state needs to grow the private sector. I encourage all the members to vote against this amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Madam President, members, I want to make 2 points about this. First of all, Senator Michelle, you're concerned about how long it's taking the bill to get here from the governors, from the administration. I've chaired 5 different committees under the last 3 governors, and I've often carried bills for the administration, sincerely, because I wanted to help them along, and not as a game or a gimmick, but help them along, and I was repeatedly frustrated. The last 8 years under the environment, chairing the Environment Committee and then the Health Policy Committee,
waiting for bills from the administration, and it's often a thing, sometimes a few days before deadline, we were getting major bills. And it's really frustrating to us as legislators, and I understand that. Seen it a lot of times, and it takes a long time. And with this bill, I'm sure it's taking longer than we'd like as well. But I just want you to understand in perspective that every governor has the same struggle. And again, because Governor Dayton didn't get a transition team till a month and a half later than a normal new governor would, it takes more time. So I think you should be sensitive to that. But to the substance of offering this amendment at this time, I'm happy to discuss and debate, if you want, various things about tax policy and the governor's bill and so on. Matter of fact, I may be the one who will carry the bill. I've offered that, and I'd be happy to, and I support the bill. The things I understand are going to be in it, I support the vast majority of them. I haven't seen the language any more than you have. And when we get to that, I'll be glad to bring it to the tax committee. You'll have all the chance you want to make all the speeches you want. We've already heard several. I'm sure we'll hear a lot more then. And we ought to discuss it. And you and I may not agree on every part of it. I understand that. But this is just a game today. I mean, I urge people to vote against it as well. This is a partial budget. This is not anything sincere attempt to do that. I know that people often want to see where people stand on it, but this isn't to measure of that. I'm going to be voting in support of the bill when the bill comes up. I'm going to author the bill. I'm happy to. But I'm going to vote against this today because I think it's just a pure charade.
Further discussion, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President and members, we have an opportunity here to revitalize this economy, jumpstart job growth in this state. But the governor's tax bill, his taxes on businesses, his proposals, will do just the opposite. It will put a wet blanket on any development. They will go other places. We've got a lot of numbers here, spreadsheets of numbers, a lot of stuff being passed out, but here's just three. Three can be a magic number. Seven, $355 million, and 23. I'll throw another one in there later. Seven. We have been ranked by the Tax Foundation as having the seventh worst business tax climate in this country. Seventh worst business tax climate in this nation. $355 million. That is the amount of business tax increase in dollars that the governor's proposal will bring and burden the businesses with in this state. $355 million in new taxes on businesses, job creators in this state. And 23, in case there's any lack of data or studies out there and anybody's wondering, just took a quick look. Since 1985, 23 different studies, not counting the two we've seen today in tax committee, confirming that you can increase the taxes on businesses, they will go. High taxes will influence businesses in this state. In their decisions, it'll impact job growth, economic growth. Members, this is the same medicine that has been prescribed for decades. That's why we're facing $6.2 billion in budget deficits and shortfalls. Spend and tax, tax and spend. It can't continue. It didn't work in the past, and it won't work now. Among his tax proposals on businesses, increasing minimum fees for corporate franchise taxes, it's the franchise fee, insurance taxes. He pretends in his proposal that it's a favor. The insurance companies continue to pay the premium tax, but they'll get a credit on their corporate income tax when they have to begin filing their corporate income taxes. Sounds good, but the company I just spoke to, a large Minnesota company based here, that'll cost them over $3 million in the first year alone, over $3 million. It also includes various other fees and closing so-called loopholes, foreign operating companies and royalties. That costs businesses money. Not to mention the fact that you're talking about some companies that are operating overseas and their income shouldn't be subject to the tax here. We, You know, meanwhile, in other states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, they get it. They're not only working on controlling their budget and controlling spending, but they're lowering taxes. I don't know how many of you have recently completed a Michigan business tax return. A few years ago, they had an atrocious business tax return. Then they redid it under the former governor and made it even more atrocious, stole more money from businesses. Well, now they elected a new governor, and he's decided that he's going to want to get rid of that and go to a regular income tax system and stop gouging businesses. We all know what's happened to Michigan over the years. There was that commercial with Detroit. You've seen that? Yeah, it makes Detroit look good, but they're bulldozing city blocks because they no longer have businesses in that state. They've all left because of policies and spending and taxing over the decades. We're not just competing with these other states. We're also competing with Ireland, with Vietnam and China. You want to know why manufacturing is leaving the state in this country? We have a combined marginal corporate income tax rate with this state of almost 45%. And you say, well, that's the marginal piece. Their effective goes down. Close the loopholes and our effective rates go up. So again, I ask you, is that a good thing to do? Is that what we want? Is that the path we want to follow? Is that the answer to our problems? Is that going to create jobs and attract investment? It hasn't worked in the past, and it won't work now. We all want good schools. We want safe streets, fire departments, great health care for everybody. But this won't do it. This will chase businesses away. Remember who hires people and creates jobs. Where we get our revenue from? We get it from businesses and individuals, entrepreneurs, who take risk, invest their money, create businesses, go to existing companies, continue to work there, hire people, generate revenue, throw it into our coffers, go back to the neighborhoods, buy homes and build streets, make good schools. That won't happen when you chase businesses away. Like them or hate them, that's the way it works. We need the companies, we need the business, we need the investment. These taxes will chase them away. They will go to Wisconsin. I'd just like to say in closing that we talk about fairness. Is it fair to continue to do this and subject our children to worse conditions than we grew up with? That's what the governor's tax plan will do. 7 years, I'm sorry, seventh worst business tax climate in this nation, $355 million of increased taxes on businesses, and numerous studies, and that it would be, it's the third highest marginal income tax rate in this nation. My wife has a great saying. She says, lessons will be repeated until they are learned. So I stand in opposing A11. It will destroy the economic base of this state, and we will have nothing to hand down to our children. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Madam President. Senator Ortman's comment really caught my attention because she made a comment about attracting preeminent scientists to our state. And that just really jumped out at me because just in the last week, the new Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources actually stripped, I believe, 19 peer-reviewed research grants from their proposal, which we spent hundreds of hours putting together over the last summer and fall on a bipartisan basis, research grants to some of Minnesota's preeminent scientists. Research grants which lead to research that leverages a lot of money in private investment and innovative business development. And I have to say that I've heard from a number of those preeminent scientists, some of whom have internationally respected reputations, in the last week. Many of them have emailed me and called me in dismay that one of our few funding sources for research and innovation that doesn't even affect the budget, the general fund budget of the state of Minnesota or the deficit, have been stripped out, and they are very concerned about that and wondering why we're not supporting scientific research that leverages innovation in our business community. And not one of them complained about a proposal to have that would affect many of them and require many of them to pay a little bit more in taxes so that they would contribute their share. None of them were concerned about that, but what they were concerned about is genuine support for scientific research and innovation in the state of Minnesota. And so if that's really our concern, then I think we're barking up the wrong tree.
Senator Gerlach.
Madam President, I impose a call of the Senate.
Senate is under call.
Madam President.
Senator Gerlach.
I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Sergeant will be instructed to bring in the absent members. Further discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just direct my comments to the snowbird provision, affectionately known as a snowbird provision. And actually, Madam President, members, this is kind of a job creation portion of this bill. It's a job creation for our CPAs and our tax attorneys, because I can guarantee you there are many people out there that are looking at this provision, and they are ready to do whatever they can to lower their taxes, lower the penalty, and they will be moving out of the state. And we will lose our competitiveness, and I can almost guarantee you this. This is rumblings out there in my area, certainly. Along with the technology that's coming online, people are more portable because they can be very effective and flexible with their schedules. So many people can live outside of the state and still do business in Minnesota. And we lose all that tax growth in the state because people do not want to pay the taxes. I'm very concerned about this part. People are getting the wrong message of the priorities of Minnesota. So let's be very careful about what we're doing here. There's many states that are actively watching what we're doing, for example, Arizona, and they are going to be actively campaigning for our residents. And frankly, folks, we're just sending the wrong signal.
Further discussion, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to be clear. I want to ask for a roll call vote on this amendment on the A11. And I want to thank, I'm not sure if he's even in the chamber now, but Senator Marty, I appreciated his comments. He's prepared to carry this bill, I guess when there is a bill. But members, I just stress again, our committees are up and going. We're 2 months into the session. We've got 81 days left. And to hear from the finance commissioner today that we're not going to see a bill until middle of March, that's too late. That's too late. So we need to begin this discussion. So I appreciate what's happening today on the Senate floor.
Further discussion, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I rise to speak in opposition. It makes for a great soundbite to say tax the rich. But when you add additional taxes, you're going to do a shift because you are going to change behavior. And especially when it comes to property tax, I just want to talk a little bit about putting a surcharge on high-value homes, because we use static scoring, not dynamic scoring. And we learned a little bit in tax committee today about dynamic scoring. and some of the challenges that faces. But we just take a snapshot and assume nothing's going to change with the market. And I would suggest when you implement a new tax, when you raise rates, you are going to change not only behavior, but you're going to have an effect to the market. For instance, just take Western Hennepin County, for example. If this new surcharge, you might be able to get away with raising a surcharge or a levy in good times when values are rising and when home sales are going up. But look around. Home sales are not going up. They're going down. Home values are going down. And this is just going to depress the market further. So if you took a 11% reduction where the state may think they're going to get a $460 revenue off of that home, they're actually going to cause about a $1,700 shift to other properties. So you may think you're going after those higher level homes, but you're going to drive those market values down. And that's just going to be a property tax shift to more moderate priced homes. And so when it maybe sounds good to say we're going to tax the rich, you're going to have a big property tax shift, income tax shift, and all these shifts. And one day you're going to realize when you wake up in the morning and you're getting ready to go to the work and you're looking in the mirror that anybody that has a job and anybody who's working, that's the rich. And so I think we do need to take market place conditions into consideration here. I think what we're doing is not heading in the right direction. Certainly, we need to be concerned about our housing market. We need to be concerned about our business climate. And we should be looking at ways to improve it, not hinder it. And this is a very critical time in our economy. And I'm fearful that this is going to spiral us down further into a recession just at the moment where we're starting to pick up a little steam here. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Senjum.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President and members. Appreciate Senator Michelle bringing this amendment forward today. It gives us, I think, a chance to talk about this, to flush it out a bit, maybe to understand it a little bit better and get an idea where people are on it. And we certainly look forward to the vote. But Madam President and members, I think of my reaction the day that that this particular proposal was announced, and I guess I would describe it in the terms of shock and awe. Shock and awe. You know, is this real? How can it be? Does this move Minnesota forward? And frankly, I don't think it does. Frankly, I don't think it moves the process forward. And then I think about the hundreds of thousand people in those cameras today that are looking in and listening to this debate and trying to figure out what's going on in their lives and what their future is and whether they frankly have a future in the near term in terms of hope and opportunity. And so we think about those people, and then I think about this proposal and what it does and how it advances what our interests is in them and in their future. Is this a bill about hope, growth, and opportunity? I don't think so. I think this is a bill that frankly takes us nowhere in terms of an economic future in Minnesota. So I know that there's folks in those cameras that are thinking about hope, they're thinking about rebound, they're thinking about a new day in Minnesota, they're thinking about a new job, they're thinking about perhaps whether they're going to go to work tomorrow on a Friday and frankly find out that their business is not going to be there for them anymore. And there's a lot of angst and sensitivities out there. We all know that with respect to how Minnesotans feel right now. But then to lay on them, frankly, the largest tax increase in the state of Minnesota, maybe history of the state of Minnesota, perhaps well be, could be the state of the country. $3.35 billion in terms of a tax increase in a single bill is pretty phenomenal where I come from. That's a pretty big increase. And if that's the message, if that's the route going forward, I would simply contend, frankly, it doesn't work. And as you think about other governors across the country, and I think we've all seen this sheet of red and blue states across the country, what governors are doing, how they're reacting to the economic situation our country faces. I don't think there's a one of them amongst those 50 states that is thinking in terms of the right direction is a tax increase. More often they're thinking, of course, the right direction is a little less government, a little more economic competitiveness, a little bit more in terms of moving their state forward from the standpoint of business climate. Then I also think about what this does to the dynamics of this group. And there will be a day down the way, nearing May 23rd, when somehow all this has to work. And so, in my mind, this particular proposal, it doesn't really bring us together. I think it just separates us a little bit more, and somehow we're going to have to pull a little bit harder, maybe, to come together and make this budget season work. We know we're going to have to do that. We simply know that. But taking a budget proposal and extending it way out that far, a $3.35 billion tax increase, simply doesn't, in my mind, make sense. And frankly, it hurts the process, in my mind. Mr. President, or Madam President, members, we've been called to lead. Been called to lead in perhaps the most difficult time in our state's history. It's not an easy task. It's going to be a difficult task. But as we think about the starting point, and as we think about what has been the message, you know, the first message out of the gate, this massive tax increase, again, is not the kind of message for Minnesota, not the kind of message Minnesota ought to convey to the nation, or for that matter, the world. We're not going to grow this economy, we're not going to prosper, we're not going to have a new Minnesota with this kind of direction. So as I think, Madam President, about where we are and where we're going, I think about those people in the cameras and what our obligation is to those people in the cameras today in terms of moving our state forward. We all know we're going to have difficult decisions, but I think we also know that this is not the direction for the state of Minnesota. We need a direction that's going to make our state competitive across this country and across this world. And unless we do that, we're going to be last in line for economic recovery. So understand this, members, if you will, as we go forward, we need to deal with this very seriously. I'm not suggesting that we're not. But this is not the direction that we're going to take and will take to move this state forward. The stakes are high. The mission is critical. Our task is large. And this is not the direction, members and Madam President, in my mind, to take. Let's not take this state to economic la-la land. Let's rather take it down a firm direction and with firm footing for an economic future for all of Minnesota. That's what we need. That's the direction we need to take. This bill doesn't do it. I thank you, Senator Michelle, for bringing it forward. We need to talk about these things, and I hope we have additional good debate.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the bill or the amendment before us, we all know, is regarding the governor's tax plan and how it may be amended on to Senator Ortman's amendment. I stand opposed to the portion regarding property tax increases on certain residents in the state of Minnesota. At a time when the housing slump continues to be a drag on the economy, Governor Dayton has proposed an $85 million property tax increase. Now, I happen to be in the housing industry. I've been in it for 32 years. Taxes do have a negative effect on achieving not only value on a property, but it does draw down the activity of sales. Now, let's be square with each other and with the people back home. This tax is going to be imposed only on a small group of people that happen to own a house that's valued at over $1 million. Now, maybe we don't have a lot of sympathy for people that own a property over $1 million. And that $6,000 more in property taxes annually will only hit little over 9,000 homeowners. But maybe that $6,000 might have been used as a down payment. If they like big houses, they might like a bigger house. And maybe that $6,000 would have been used as a down payment on something they want to build. putting Minnesotans to work. Well, that isn't going to happen. Matter of fact, I think Senator Senjem here said it right. This proposal divides Minnesotans apart from one another. It does not unite each other. Matter of fact, we're kind of, I guess we're going back to the future. You may remember, and some of you have been in office for a long time, you remember when our property taxes used to have three tiers of value, and we were taxing high-value homes at nearly 3.15% at one time at the highest point, and we began to realize the folly in treating property taxes based on value to have a progressive rate higher and higher and higher than our neighbors down the street. It did divide us. We chose wisely a few years ago to start narrowing that difference. This goes in the opposite direction. And I really would like to know, where are we going? If we're going to continue to divide taxpayer against taxpayer, citizen against citizen, we're not going to come to a happy conclusion at the very end. The governor's plan and justification, at least on his own report, says owners of these extremely high-value homes typically have the greatest ability to pay. Well, I think maybe one could simplistically come to that conclusion. That's where we were when we had high rates on high-value homes in the past, but the public discussion and the research began to make us realize that that was a tax disparity and that we actually had a discriminatory tax policy toward one homeowner versus another. I think we're going back to the future on that with the governor's tax plan. The other thing that I've noticed about this tax plan is that the difference, that higher rate, that higher tax on these high-value homes, that money isn't going back to our local property or our local political subdivisions like all of our property tax is now. And you know, property taxes, they collect for the locals, the cities, the counties, the school districts. No, this is a state government tax proposal to use our property tax values as a cash cow for the state government. That's as simple as it gets, and it changes the whole dynamic of how we collect taxes in the state of Minnesota. Basically, it comes down to this. You have it, we want it, and we will get it. That's what the governor's tax proposal is all about.
Further discussion, Senator Bach. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Members and Senator Michelle, I appreciate your bringing to the floor this amendment. I did want to make a brief comment, members. I am in receipt of the copy of the letter that Senator Bach had distributed from Governor Dayton. He makes a comment that he believes that the purpose of the letter was to call attention. He said the legislative majority may try to play political games by forcing a vote on what they claim is my tax proposal. That's the quote from the letter. The question I would have then for the members of the minority is whether or not what we're voting on are the governor's tax proposals. I think they are. He's saying that we're claiming they're his tax proposals. It leads me to think that perhaps there's some uncertainty. Maybe these aren't his tax proposals, and I would be interested to hear from members of the other side if this is the case, that these are not the governor's tax proposals. I understand that they are. He's encouraging us to get down to work and not play political games, and he talks about encouraging the members of the DFL caucus to refuse to participate in the juvenile political theater, et cetera. I hope that doesn't mean he's encouraging you to leave the state, as other minorities have in other states. I hope not. But this is not a game. This is not theater. We are working on our budget. And where I come from, when you do a budget, the first thing you do is you talk about how much money do we have. And what the majority has said throughout the campaign and throughout the time we've been here is that we are focused on a budget that will live within our means, that we are going to live within the means that we have available to us just as ordinary people do and ordinary businesses do. The other side, the minority, has said, well, no, we have to have a balanced approach, meaning we have to have more revenue. And the governor has introduced a proposal that he calls a balanced approach. That's how it was presented to us in the Finance Committee. The governor's proposal was headlined a balanced approach, the balanced approach. It was primarily driven by increases in taxes. Those taxes are in the amendment that Senator Michel has brought forward. Unless they aren't, I guess I'd like to have some clarification of what we're claiming to be the tax proposals really are the tax proposals. Maybe someone would dispute that. I think they are. And so, members, this is serious because before we start on the budget process, we need to agree what kind of money are we going to use. Are we going to use the money that we have available to us, or are we going to seek more revenue, as the governor has proposed? And so those of you who believe that what the governor has offered is a balanced approach and that this is revenue that we need to have to fund the level of spending that we need to have, then you ought to vote for this. You ought to vote for the Michel Amendment. I'm not, because we have decided that we need to live within the means that we have within the revenues we have. So, members, I'm a little confused by the governor's letter. This is not theater. It's not a game. It's a serious attempt to get people to think about how much revenue are we going to say is the amount that we will work with as we prepare our budget. Is it going to be the amount that we have got projected in the forecast for revenue, or is it going to be some additional? And are we going to take the governor's proposals to raise that additional revenue? And this is a straightforward vote, a straightforward question. Do you want more revenue? Do you want the governor's revenue? Then vote yes for the amendment. But as I said, I am not. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Hand, this is a game. It's very interesting that Senator Michel says he hasn't seen the language from the governor, but we have language in front of us that he claims to be the governor's. And Senator Hand, you're claiming that if it's wrong language, then we should fix it, but you've purposely amended an amendment to an amendment, and so it would be impossible for us to fix it even if it is wrong because we can't add any more amendments on this bill. So it's obviously a game, and it's just meant to be a charade.
Further discussion, Senator Hand.
Madam President, just wanted to take a moment to respond to my friend, Senator Tomasoni. All I was asking for were people to tell us, are these the governor's tax proposals? That's all. I'm not asking for any amendments or any additional things added to the thing before us, but what the governor is suggesting that these aren't his tax proposals. And all I'm saying is I understand that Senator Michel and the Tax Committee have put together an amendment based on the governor's tax proposals. The governor's letter seems to suggest they're not. And all I'm asking for is somebody to say, well, they are. You may not like the structure they're in, or you may not think it's, as Senator Marty pointed out, it's not the complete spending package. I understand that. But the question is, are these the governor's tax proposals? We believe they are. If you like the governor's tax proposals, you ought to like the amendment. That's all we're asking for.
Further discussion, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, isn't this great theater? Huh? Isn't it fun? Those of you that are new, you get to stand up on the floor of the Senate and you get to puff out your chest a little bit. And, you know, maybe grandma's watching at home, you know, or mom or dad, or maybe even the kids are watching, you know, and oh, my mom or dad is standing up on the floor of the Senate. And I heard Senator Sendrum say that this is likely the most difficult time that we've ever met in this chamber in the history of our country. Boy, what great theatrics. Members, let me just remind you about a couple things I thought about when I heard Senator Sendrum say that. Members, people stood on the floor of this Senate and debated issues important to this state during the country's Civil War. Members, people stood on this floor, debated issues important to this state during the Great Depression. People stood on the floor of this Senate, debated things important to our state during World War II. Members, this is not a defining moment in this state or in this country's history. We've got a little economic challenge, but you know, 93% of Minnesotans are still working. And you know, Senator Hoffman, I thought your comments were interesting about, I kind of implied, and excuse me if I'm reading more into it, but this is such a bad place to do business. And I hear Republicans say that often, and our previous governor certainly said it frequently. Well, I think it's kind of interesting that as bad a place as this is, and we cite all these statistics from all these studies, the 21 Fortune 500 companies call Minnesota home. And we know we have high taxes in Minnesota compared to most states.
21 Fortune 500 companies, more Fortune 500 companies per capita than any state in the country. And we should be darn proud of the work that was done by previous members on the floor of this body that invested in this state and invested in our people, that we grew those companies here. And I'm especially proud of 3M, personally, because they started in my district up in Two Harbors on the north shore of Lake Superior. A little disappointed in his CEO's comments the last couple of days. But, you know, I think maybe you should have had a little rehearsal practice for the theater that we're going through today. Because I noticed that, I believe Senator Michel said that this is a $2.4 billion tax increase. And then I heard Senator Senjum say, well, this is a $3.35 billion tax increase. So I guess I don't know what it is because I didn't draft the language. But clearly the rehearsal didn't go that well when we can be $1 billion apart on what the real numbers in the amendment are. Now, the majority was real clear when the governor's budget proposal came out that it's dead on arrival. Okay, I get that. Okay, I respect that. You're in the majority. But it's your job now to put a budget together. But members, I think we need to be careful, especially with the cameras watching, that we're honest with Minnesotans. You know, Senator Ortman, you made a statement that Minnesota has a very progressive tax system. Senator Ortman, that's not true. It's not true, members. People watching on television, Minnesota has a regressive tax system, just like every other state does. Now, ours is a little less regressive than most states, but clearly, Senator Ortman, you know what the suits index is on any taxes that are proposed, and Senator Hoffman, if you don't know, I'm sure you're going to get a chance to learn. We all learn a little something down in room 15 almost every day that the tax committee meets. But Senator Ortman, it's not true that Minnesota has a very progressive tax system. We have a regressive system like every other state does. Ours is a little less regressive. Now, you can argue whether a little less regressive you can be translated into being progressive, but it's still a regressive tax system. It's clear that the majority doesn't know what to do. So we're trying to buy a little time here, trying to figure out how and if we can put an all-cut budget together. But, you know, we made it really clear when your partial solution came forward here a few weeks ago that we weren't going to support a piecemeal budget solution to the state's challenges. Very clear. And this is a little odd in that in all of my tenure here, generally the tax bill is the last bill that passes in a session. It's kind of one that closes the deal to make sure we do get a balanced budget. But now the proposal is, well, no, let's pass the tax bill first, and then we'll back our spending into it. Well, you know, we don't generally do it that way, not in my tenure here at least. And it's clear you don't like the governor's plan. I'm looking forward to seeing yours. And just as a little aside, you know, the day that we all got swore in here, we all agreed we were going to abide by the Constitution. I think we all take that pretty seriously. Just a little piece of information. This is a Senate file. This is a Senate file, members, and I can read you what the Constitution says about that. The Constitution says in Article 4, Section 18, revenue bills, all bills raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. So, members, even if you wanted to vote for this and get it over to the governor, it's unconstitutional, members. It's exactly what you said you were not going to do. You said you're going to abide by the Constitution. What you should have done, if you took that oath seriously, is you should have waited for the House to send over their conformity bill. And then you would have had a House file in front of us. And then the amendment, I would argue, would have met the constitutional test of the amendment being offered to a House file. I mean, clearly a political game. I'm glad that people are having fun. I hope some of your family members are watching.
You know, let's get beyond this. You know, I think we're going to get budget targets next week. I think that's what the Senate rules provide for. And let's roll up our sleeves and start getting the work done, because, you know, I think we're in our ninth week now. Ninth week. We haven't done anything on the budget yet. Haven't done anything yet. So I'm looking forward to working on the real work of this session when those budget targets come out. And it would be helpful if we could leave some of the rhetoric behind and actually get down to doing the hard work.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm wondering if the Senate Minority Leader stopped listening and learning after Election Day. Yes, we have 21 Fortune 500 companies in Minnesota, and we have been meeting with them, and they are telling us that if Governor Dayton's proposal gets passed, they're leaving. They're having a hard time attracting and retaining the very employees they need to run their research and development businesses. They can't bring back the capital and repatriate it to expand here. We're making it harder with the tax policies we keep enacting, the taxing and spending. So are you listening, Senator Bach? Members, are you listening to members of the business community who say that if we do these kinds of things, they are making business decisions not to invest here? Senator Bach, the argument about the Constitution, I have to say, is rather silly considering how many times we voted on governor's proposals around here in my last 8 years. Finally, members, I've said before, this is a fiction, the governor's proposal. It's based on fiction. Two of them. Number one, that we're going to be taxing the wealthy. We've already shown no, we're not. The governor intends to tax every Minnesota taxpayer at 10.95, the highest rate, second highest rate in the nation. That's clearly intended here. He wants to raise property taxes. He wants to raise corporate taxes. Retail car rental car taxes, insurance taxes. But let me just add one more piece of the fiction so you can truly see it. How many times have we heard, well, we need the governor's proposal in order to pay for all those local government aids and county program aids? Members, truly you should be able to trust your local elected officials better than that. They don't need the money. They showed us they don't need the money. Do you know how many people I met with who said they really love their local elected officials? There might be problems in other communities, but theirs are doing just great. Isn't that true? If you had meetings with businesses and if you had meetings with local community representatives, they trust their local guys. They have some questions about everybody else. And I just want to say we can and should trust them. They don't need the windfall. They didn't budget for the LGA and the county program aid cuts that we instituted over the last couple of years, that members in this body, members in this minority, voted for last year. They don't need it. They didn't budget for it. That's what they told us in my office. That's what I know they were saying in every office. They cut spending, and their communities are proud of them. They got control of the spending. They've had fiscal discipline in their cities. And I've got a handout for you that will show, after all the cuts in 2011, after all the arguments the sky was falling in, they raised taxes by just 1% on the residential home values in the state of Minnesota, less than 1%. 2% taxes, property taxes statewide. It is a fiction to say that we have to raise taxes to pay for that. Our communities are doing just fine. Our cities and counties are doing their job. They're doing it well. Their residents are proud of them. We don't need to raise taxes like this in order to bail them out. They're doing just fine. So let's not engage in the fiction. None of the sky is falling in arguments from Governor Dayton. Let's get back to work. Let's work on some real solutions to the budget deficit. We can do it, members. We can. I know we can. But we have to listen to the members of our community. We have to listen to the businesses that are here to educate us every day about what these proposals will do. They will shut down economic growth, and Minnesotans can't afford that.
Further discussion, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to be clear with the members. So, again, what we have before us The A11, this amendment has been drafted by nonpartisan staff. So this is a fair and accurate representation of what the governor has talked about. It has been revised since the recent forecast, so it takes out the surcharge. I think at one point Senator Senchum was talking about shock and awe, so there's a little less shock and awe. That's what takes it down from $3 billion into the $2 billion range, Senator Senchum. So, again, members, we got to get going. We can't wait. We said we're going to focus on tax and budget issues. We said we're going to focus on the economy. And today we get to vote. That's why we have these boards on either side of the chamber. We get to vote today. I think the vote today on the governor's tax plan should be no. We do not believe that tax and spend is going to get us to economic recovery. We do not believe that tax and spend is the way to get a balanced budget. It's March, members. It's the ninth week of session. I'm glad we're having this debate. I'm glad we're having this discussion. I believe there'll be bipartisan opposition to the governor's tax plan. I think it's important that we get it on record today.
Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, members. Thank you, Senator Michelle, for offering this amendment to the amendment. I will be voting no. And Senator Bach, you know, I appreciate your words, and I know you're having a little fun. One thing I disagree with is when you talked about this being a game. I don't believe it's a game for 1 second. I believe we have 83 days now. Senator Lilly, you have an app, I believe, that counts down. As 81 days, members. And we are working hard on a budget in the majority. And you will see it shortly. And as you know, Senator Bach, we have set very aggressive budget deadlines for ourselves because we came here to get that budget accomplished. And we need to do it in a way that's responsible to the people of Minnesota. One thing you were right about, you said, you know, maybe your families are watching. Well, I am thinking about my family today. I'm thinking about my mom and dad, who started a small business themselves, in a small S corporation, and worked hard my entire life and sacrificed. And now they should be able to enjoy their retirement here in the state of Minnesota. They should be thanked and rewarded for their hard work and the food that they put on hundreds of Minnesotans' tables. And I'm also thinking about my daughter, Rachel, 15-year-old at Buffalo High School. And I'm thinking about her future in the state of Minnesota. I'm thinking about the opportunity that I would like her to have. And I am concerned with Governor Dayton's tax proposal and what that will do to our economy. And so today, because of those concerns, I'll be voting no, Senator Michelle, on your amendment. But it is not because it is theater, and it is not because it is a game. I am voting no, and I think it's important to let the people of Minnesota know what we believe in. If you think that we should be spending, I believe the governor had around over a 22% increase in government spending, state spending, then vote yes and show us how you're going to pay for that. But if you are concerned about the economy, if you're concerned about the economic future of the state, as I am, if you are concerned with what these proposals, as we heard from members of the tax committee, will do to the economy, what businesses are telling us this will do to the economy, then I would suggest that you would like to vote no.
Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll on the Michelle amendment to the amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being one aye and 63 nays, the amendment is not adopted. We revert to the Ortman A-10 amendment unamended. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move to withdraw the A-10 amendment at this time.
Senator Ortman has withdrawn the A-10 amendment. Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I would like to lay Senate File 47 on the table.
All those in favor of laying. For what purpose do you rise, Senator Bach?
I'd like to speak to the motion.
On the motion to lay on the table.
Well, Madam President, the governor sent a letter on Monday of this week.
Point of order, Madam President, point of order. I don't believe a motion to lay the bill on the table.
Senator Ortman, you need to wait to be recognized, please.
Thank you, Madam President.
And I do understand that it is not debatable, but since Senator Bach is the minority leader, I thought we would give him just a few minutes.
Very, very briefly, Madam President, and Senator Ortman, the question I had intended to ask on the amendment was, the governor sent a letter Monday to the leaders. The state has been withholding from businesses in this state at the request of Governor Plante at the end of last session because he was worried about state cash flow. And we did have cash flow problems, and we ended up borrowing from schools last fall so the state could pay its bills. But the governor requested in a letter on Monday that the $150 million that's
Senator
being
Bach,
withheld, this is to the conformity issue, Madam President.
Is it to the motion to lay on the table? That is what we are, and I've granted some leeway in order to give you a moment to talk about that, but you've gone beyond that.
I can do it later, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Roll call on the motion to lay. Roll call has been requested. Roll call has been granted on
Madam
the motion
President,
to lay on the table. Yes, Senator Ortman.
As you extended an accommodation to the minority leader, I would just like to say that the governor has had all of these conformities on his desk. He vetoed them.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call. The secretary will take the roll on the motion to lay on the table. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 29 nays, the motion does prevail.
Madam President.
Senator Koch.
Remaining under motions and resolutions, I would move that we take Senate Resolution 47 from the table. Members, this is the permanent rules.
Senator Koch moves to take Senate File 47. No, Senate Resolution 47 from the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Senator Koch.
Members, thank you very much. What we're going to take up today now are the permanent rules of the Senate. We had a good discussion of these in Rules Committee, and I appreciate all members' work on this. I am going to allow Senator Fischbach the floor to describe some of the the larger changes. Much of it, many of the changes, are renumbering, the renaming of committees, and so we won't touch on that, but there's a couple changes, and I believe there's an amendment.
Madam President.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I do believe that members did receive a summary from Senate Counsel regarding the permanent rules. And so that does give us a good overview. And I will try to be brief on this. There's a few things that I would like to just mention. There are obviously throughout the document, there are corrections in the names of the committees. We do some renumbering. Those are not necessarily a change on those renumbering portions. We just felt it would clarify, make things easier to read. We've removed some outdated language and just generally try to clean it up a bit. Another issue where we made a couple of changes is in the complaints, both to an open meeting law concern and to the ethical conduct subcommittee. We took any reference to oral complaints out and made sure that those would be in writing. There's also, and I can give you a page references, but I will just go through these and then I'd be happy to answer questions if need be. We designate who makes the target announcements on page 4. What that does is states that either the finance chair or the majority leader would have to make, or excuse me, the chair on rules would have to make those announcements. There is some language for committees that would require the same kind of language that we have on the floor regarding budget bills and balanced budget amendments. When we offer amendments to budget bills, that those would not move outside of the targets. We now apply that to committees. We remove on page 6 there, we remove some outdated language, but in addition to that, we remove the provision for the fourth term for the committee chairs. That was put in when committee chairs were ending on an odd, well, at the beginning of a short term for us in the 2 years, so we removed that language. We've also removed language that would have an open meeting requirement for the caucuses of Hennepin, Ramsey, and St. Louis County. We've changed the need to vote on continuing committees from 10 p.m. to midnight. We've also made provisions that would allow the chaplain and the vet on the floor. That was not actually in the language of the rules, so we've added that so that they are allowed on. We've also taken out the ability for heads of agencies to come onto the floor. The major change that was made, and I guess I don't have the page number in front of me, is the rule regarding credentialing for news coverage. And there were some concerns with that, and my understanding is a group was put together to discuss this. It involved both sides of the staff people and news reporters to come up with this credentialing, new credentialing system, and it would put that in the hands of the sergeant-at-arms, and it really removes any partisan bent that might come to that, and this would be a process for them to be credentialed through the Sergeant at Arms office. That does take about 3 pages of the changes, and I want to say it starts on page 12, but I don't have it right here in front of me. There's also, we've added a dress code, which was always the tradition of the Senate, but it was never actually in the rules. That appears on, I believe, page 13. I can't read my own writing, but and then we've also allowed for executive session for a committee to meet in an executive session only in the case of a employee disciplinary action. If there's been some kind of complaint, they would have that ability in order to find out if there was something sensitive going on, but obviously that does take a vote of the committee to go into executive session. And then finally, there's we've made a small change to the conflict of interest portion that appears on the second to the last page. And there's a statute referenced, and we have kept that statute reference, obviously, but we've removed that conflicts of interest language because it's repetitive from the statute. So we've just cleaned it up a little bit and referenced the statute in no way changes the issues of conflict of interest, just a cleaner way to explain it and has the reference to the statute. Those, I think, are the high points, and if there are questions, I would be happy to answer. Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Senator Berglund.
Madam President, will Senator Fischbach yield?
She will yield.
Senator Fischbach, the question I have is in regard to Rule 7.7, that amendment to an omnibus bill in committee would be out of order. I'm wondering if you feel that you have are offering an amendment in good faith that does balance, and the chair rules that the amendment is out of order, what would be your recourse?
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, that absolutely teed me up because I do have the A3 amendment that I think would address the issue that Senator Berglund has. So if it's all right with you, Madam President, I would go ahead and offer the A3 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Fischbach moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 47 as follows. Page 5, delete lines 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. This is the A3 amendment.
Senator Fischbach.
President, I believe I'm cutting out my microphone, but the A3 amendment hang on. Thank you. In an emergency, we just borrow the guys next to us. Madam President, the A3 amendment does just on page 5 there delete. Oh, you know what? I think this may be written wrong now that I look at this. Because what I am trying to do is to remove that portion of the 7.7.
Well, Senator Fischbach, that is repealing those three lines. Are you intending to take all three or just a portion of it?
I am sorry, Madam President. I am looking at an older version of the rules. My amendment is correct. I apologize. That was my fault. I mixed it up because I have an older version. So, yes, I am trying. Yes, I believe it is correct. I'm removing 7.7. I apologize.
So the A3 amendment is doing what you intend it to do?
Madam President, yes, it is.
Is there any discussion on that amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A2 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Rest moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 47 as follows. Page 12 deletes line 23 to 26. This is the A2 amendment.
Thank you,
Senator Rest.
Madam President, I'd like to request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Roll call granted.
Thank you, Madam President. Direct your attention to page 12, lines 23 to 26, which I am moving to delete. Senator Fischbach mentioned in her discussion that she was adding a Senate tradition to our rules. I would submit that there are many traditions and customs in the Senate that are understood with regard to our decorum because we are all adults. I do not think that it is necessary to put a dress code that doesn't even include suits for women as part of the acknowledgement of what is proper attire. And I think all of us understand what proper attire is. And it is not necessary to be in the Senate rules, and I hope that you will join me in moving to delete those lines.
Madam President.
Senator Fischbach.
Could I get a hard copy of the amendment? I don't have my computer in front of me, and I would, if I could get a hard copy, that would be helpful.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I'm looking at the proposed rules and the amendment that's listed online, and they don't seem to match up, because there aren't any changes on page 2, lines 15 and 16.
Page 12, lines 23 to 26 is the A2 amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, or Madam President, the amendment that came up online the amendment that's presently before the body, it does not say that.
Thank you. Mr. Lynch has indicated that they will re-release it online. Thank you. Senator Higgins.
Madam President, I rise in support of Senator Rest's amendment. Members, in your email, you'll see an email from me that talks about the legislative traditions of the dress codes here in the Capitol. And its date is 1991. There also is attached to them a series of cartoons by a cartoonist who used to be at the Minneapolis Tribune named Dick Gindin. And the legislature was one of his favorite targets, especially when leisure suits came out and when our predecessors used to show up in plaid jackets and striped shirts and polka-dotted ties, all in the same outfit. So you'll see some of those in your email, and I hope you enjoy those. Let me also just tell you about what a tough time they had on opening day of 1971. Now, this was in the Senate a very difficult time because they were so closely divided into liberals and conservatives. And the clash of the fashions was also sported by each fashion. And in the story that I sent you, it talks about how Senator Florian Shimoleski from Sturgeon Lake wore an all-green ensemble, and former liberal Senator Winston Borden of Brainerd favored a rust-colored sport coat which no one could mistake for the quiet raiment of the gentleman who he defeated, who was evidently quite a keeper of Senate traditions. Senator Win Borden is one of my Facebook friends, and so I sent him this story last night. And he sent me back another story about how the day he wore that sport coat, Majority Leader Nick Coleman, who was evidently quite the dresser, called on him on the floor and asked him whether he'd taken a sofa out and shot it and then had a suit coat made out of it. So I hope you enjoy this story, I hope you enjoy the cartoons, and I hope you vote for Senator Rest's amendment.
Senator Anderson?
Well, Madam President, I guess I can't help but make a comment myself as the first woman to wear pants on the Senate floor back in 1993, and I just wanted to point out and you can thank me, all of you who benefit from that on these cold winter days. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator
And
Anderson.
Those of you who got to wear pants before. But I'm going to agree with Senator Rest that we resolve that issue by conversation and behavior, and I think we can trust ourselves to do that. Senator Pappas reminds me we've seen stories from older history than Senator Higgins mentioned that where the press commented on women in the Senate by describing their hats. And I honestly think it's all very entertaining and fun and a matter of real-life comfort, but it's really not important enough to be in our Senate rules. I think we're grown-ups and we can figure it out and maintain our decorum and respectfulness.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, thank you. Madam President, there in no way, shape, or form after I was listening to Senator Higgins, in no way, shape, or form does this make any judgment on taste. So we are not judging on taste. We were simply trying to put that that dress code that we have all tried very hard to follow into the Senate rules so that when the sergeant-at-arms do have an issue, they have something more than tradition to base their rulings on so that they are able to deal with issues if there are any on the floor. But I will say this. If there is that much concern over having some kind of standard regarding our clothing, I will certainly support the rest amendment, and we will take it out. But I don't think it was meant in any way, shape, or form to offend. It was simply something in order for us to be able to have some standard in writing so that if there ever was a question, we would have something to base that on. So I will support the amendment.
Is there any further discussion, Senator Rest?
Madam President, I appreciate the graciousness of Senator Fischbach with regard to my amendment, and I withdraw my request for a roll call.
Thank you. Roll call has been withdrawn. If there's no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Are there any further amendments or discussion? Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. I offer the A50 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Wieger moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 47 as follows, page 7, lines 7 and 8. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. Proposed Rule 12.1 would not continue the requirement now that the caucus for Hennepin County, Ramsey County, or St. Louis County be open to the public. I currently chair the Ramsey County Senate delegation, and I appreciate the transparency and openness in the rules. In fact, we have an upcoming meeting Friday, March 18th, here at the Capitol, Room 118, to discuss the proposed Viking proposal in Arden Hills, as well as the state budget. The transparency is very important, and I think it sends the wrong signal to delete that requirement. And I ask for a roll call vote.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I rise in support of Senator Wieger's amendment. First of all, senators, if you can get Duluthians and Rangers in the same room at the same time, which is what would be required for the St. Louis County delegation to actually meet, that's worth selling a ticket to, and it might actually help us with our revenue issues. But in all seriousness, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't want to have meetings that are transparent to the public. So as one voice of the St. Louis County delegation, we're fine having that transparency, and am in support of the amendment. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Actually, in committee, there was an amendment offered by Senator Limmer to reinstate this language, and Senator Berglund spoke so eloquently against that that we, in fact, left language stricken. And her point was, these are three caucuses. We have many caucuses, whether it's the rural caucuses, we have many working groups. And her point was, if they're not included, why are we singling out these three county caucuses? Now, if members want to leave that in, I have no problem with that. But our thought was, are we going to insert 84 other counties? Are we going to insert the names of the other caucuses? I'll leave that up to the body. But it's an interesting discussion we're having today, given the discussion that was in rules. So thanks, members. And I think I would just issue some concern that there are many caucuses that have many meetings, and why are we singling out these three? But
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. I don't know the background on why these three caucus cocci were included in the rules, but I would imagine it might be because it's a large voting block and the potential to have a significant impact on the process. Should there be additional changes? Perhaps, but don't eliminate what we have right now.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I am the co-chair, along with Representative Loon, of the Hennepin County delegation, and we prefer the rule, or I prefer the rule as the co-chair, the way it is, and would not like to see it removed.
Senator
Support the Uyghur motion.
Excuse me. Senator Pogue-Miller, were you wishing to speak on this issue? Okay.
Madam President.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, I agree with Senator Koch. I don't know why these three caucuses are singled out, and since nobody knows the history or can tell us why, it seems to me it's a little prejudicial in that unless everybody has to do it, then these three caucuses shouldn't have to do it, and I think it should be taken out of the rules.
Madam President.
Senator Koch.
Again, I'll just state that members can vote as they please on this. I would also just point out that nothing in our rules prohibits these caucuses from having open meetings if they like. We just aren't singling them out in the rules, but body can decide.
If there's no further discussion, I believe Senator Uyghur called for a roll call vote. The secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 51 ayes and 10 nays, the motion is adopted, or the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Bach. Oh, well, I believe Senator Pogue-Miller was on his feet for a while. I apologize, Senator Pogue-Miller.
Madam President, would Senator Fischbach yield?
Senator Fischbach will yield.
Senator Fischbach, I'm looking at the change on page 28 on conflicts of interest. And I note that there is additional language added under standards of ethical conduct, but it's not quite as explicit as current Rule 57. And in the reference in 10A07, some of that language is in that statutory reference, but that statutory reference seems to be mostly about local government officials. And I'm just wondering if the Rules Committee discussed this thoroughly, and does it work?
Madam President.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, we did have a discussion, as I recall, on this. And it is covered, but it does, 10A.07 does reference legislators too. And I think that we have covered it. And my understanding of that conflicts of interest language in current Rule 57 is that it was actually written before the statute, so the statute supersedes it. And so we just, you know, it's really, it does not in any way lessen our issues on conflicts of interest. It just cleans the rule up. And Senator Pogue-Miller, Madam President, Senator Pogue-Miller, I see that you're looking at the statute now, so if I'm incorrect, please correct me.
Senator Pogue-Miller, do you have anything to offer in response to Senator Fischbach?
Madam President.
Senator Pogue-Miller.
On a quick reading of the statute, I don't see that there are references to legislators or somebody who is not a legislator, and I haven't been able to figure out if it all connects or not.
Okay, thank you. Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, and I didn't hear exactly what Senator Pogue-Miller said, but it does reference a public official, and so it does have reference to that. That would apply to legislators under public official, and if that's, I think that's what I understood his concern to be.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Bach, you were seeking to be recognized.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to thank Senator Fischbach. She was kind enough to come over and see me and work through many of the proposed changes. Some of the things that she had suggested were not incorporated in the rules when they were brought to the Rules Committee. I want to thank her for working with me and my staff on that. But I have one question, I think, if Senator Koch would yield for a question.
Senator Koch will yield.
Senator Koch, Rule 7.2, where we give the Chair of the Rules Committee additional authority to adjust the budget targets. I just would like to know, for some reason, we didn't include the Chair on Finance in the adjustment of the target, but they're part of the original target setting. But I just would like to know kind of what the intent or why we're thinking about adjusting budget targets after they're set, kind of how it might actually be put into practice.
Senator Koch.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. Senator Bach. Senator Bach, this was added as a flexibility measure. I assure you, the Chair of Finance, Senator Roebling, will be involved in all discussions. I don't anticipate that it will be widely used, maybe never, but we felt Senator Senjum, I think, offered it in committee as just an operation for flexibility. I think there was some concern with the other piece and how that might work together, the other amendment, the Section 7.7 that was removed by Senator Fischbach, but I think this language I'd appreciate leaving in simply for flexibility.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Koch, I'm not suggesting we take it out. I'm just curious how it might be implemented. My understanding is it would only be used between when the targets are set, which in this case this year is March 10th, and the actual date that the bills need to come out of their respective committees, which is March 25th. So I just am curious, are we talking about a 15-day window here where the Chair of Rules would have the ability to adjust targets? Is that, I just want to be clear.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Bach. Senator Bach, you'll notice that the 15 days is a minimum. In theory, we could have set the targets 30 days before, and this would just allow for flexibility. So, you know, that's the intention with this amendment, and that's the use. But right, it just depends on when you set the targets. But that wouldn't necessarily require 15 days. Could be 30 days. Could be 40 days. Could be.
So then
Senator Bach,
Madam President, Senator Koch, after the date the targets, the bills move out, there's no reason for target adjustments after that. I wouldn't think. I guess that's kind of my question.
Senator Koch?
Madam President, Senator Bach, I wouldn't imagine that happening. So does that give you some comfort? Or?
All right. Senator Marty?
Madam President, I have the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Marty moves to amend Senate Resolution Number 47 as follows, page 7, line 31. This is the A51 amendment.
Madam President, Senator this Marty. Would simply restore page 7, rule 12.4, would restore the 10 p.m. committee quitting time for evenings unless there's a two-thirds vote. I'd like to make the case, I know some of the members here, Senator Scheid, Senator Olson, Senator Rest, and others, were around back when we used to have committees that would meet 2, 3 in the morning. And I don't think you have a good legislative process. Most of us aren't the most thoughtful people late at night. If there is a pressing issue we've had, I don't know when the 10 p.m. rule was put in place, but I think it's been around for quite a while now, and it's worked pretty well. And there are times when we run up against it, and then it's just a simple vote of the committee. I know it's a two-thirds vote, but I think it does press us to try and do our work during more reasonable hours. So I'd like to urge members' support for this, just to keep it where it was, 10 o'clock. If you're in the middle of an important discussion or there's a time issue, a two-thirds vote seems reasonable to allow the exception to it, and so I'd urge your support.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Latz? To the amendment?
I'm sorry, not to the amendment.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. I think that it's reasonable to let a meeting go until midnight. I used to cover multiple school board, city council meetings, and a lot of those went well into the evening. Midnight is a reasonable time, and I am one of these people who has quite a distance to drive after I get done here. But I think if we are assured to be done by midnight and not interrupt the flow of a meeting that needs to continue to a conclusion would probably be a wise thing to do in time management.
Is there any further discussion? If not, Senator Marty has requested a roll call. Roll call granted.
Madam President.
Senator Fishback.
Madam President, I understand that roll call was just requested, but I am going to oppose the amendment. I think that we can go till midnight at this point, and then I think that makes actually more sense than we can just end the meetings. I've seen many times where at 10 o'clock we vote and then just go for hours and hours after that. So I think that midnight just seems like be less likely to go beyond that if we just leave it at midnight. Thank you.
If there's no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 29 yeas and 33 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. That was the A51. Is there any further discussion? Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, will Senator Fishbach yield?
Senator Fishbach will yield.
President Fishbach. Madam Chair, I'm going to seek a further clarification, and maybe Senator Koch would be the right person to answer this. I'm not sure. But following up on Senator Bach's questions about Rule 7.2, the language that I'm reading, I think, could be interpreted in two different ways. One would be perhaps to grant the power solely to the chair of the Committee on Rules and Administration to change targets, but the other one would simply be to specify the mechanism by which that change in targets is made public. I'll just read the sentence on 3.29. Subsequent adjustments to the targets required under this rule shall be made by public announcement. of the chair. So can I clarify, is in the intent for the power to rest in the hands of the chair of the Committee on Rules and Administration to change those targets, or is the intent simply to specify the mechanism by which that target change is made known to those participants in the process and the public?
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, this is about the mechanism in which it's made known. This is actually something that's been practiced quite some time in the Senate, and we're just specifying who would make those changes known.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Koch, then this amendment does not grant to the committee, the chair of the Committee on Rules and Administration, the sole authority to change those targets. Is that correct?
Senator Koch?
Madam President, Senator Latz, this is about the who would announce the targets.
Senator Latz.
I'll assume that means the answer to my question is yes, it does not grant to the chair sole authority to actually change the target.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Anderson.
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam President. I just have a question, a clarification question as well for Rule 17.3 about smoking. And it states that smoking is not permitted in the Senate chamber, galleries, the retiring room, et cetera, or other hearing rooms, offices, or other spaces under the control of the Senate. And I'm just wondering if someone could tell me what that means. What is under the control of the Senate? And does that include outdoor spaces that are just outside the door or the window? Page 12, Madam President, it's page 12, Rule 17, well, it's 17.3.
Senator Fischbach?
Madam President, I don't know what under the control of the Senate refers to.
So, Senator Anderson?
Well, Madam President, if we don't know what the rule means, what do we do about it? Should we just let it go?
Madam President.
Or perhaps we should get a...
Senator Fischbach.
We should decide.
Madam President, I did get a clarification, so I have a better understanding of what is under Senate control, and that we don't have control of the entire building, just the hearing rooms and the floor and the retiring room, those items that the Senate, or those areas that the Senate actually controls. The House has control over some rooms in the building, and then the Capitol plant management would have control of some of the others. So that's what my understanding of that language means.
Senator Anderson?
Well, Madam President, I guess I was wondering about the outdoor spaces that are connected to those places that are in our control. So out on the balcony, out a door or a window of a room that is under our control.
Senator Anderson, since this is a provision that isn't being changed, I don't know what the history of. Is there anybody that can give us any insight to that? Apparently not. If there's no further discussion on the rules, there's been a
Madam President.
Senator Koch?
There's no further discussion. Excuse me, Madam President. I would move to adopt Senate Resolution number 47, and I would request a roll call.
A roll call is required for this. If there's no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting. Who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 57 ayes and 5 nays, resolution number 47 is adopted. Are there announcements of Senate interest? Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Madam President. For those members of the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee, that meeting has been canceled today, and we will resume our regular schedule on Tuesday.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise for a point of personal privilege.
Personal privilege? What is your personal privilege? It's granted.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, if I could indulge you just for a moment. Last Sunday, Army Specialist Andrew Wilfert of Rosemount was killed in Afghanistan. He was 31 years old. He was a 1997 graduate of Rosemount High School, and he enlisted in the Army in 2009 and was assigned to the 552nd Military Police Company based out of Schofield Barracks in Hawaii. He was deployed to Afghanistan, and he did die in Kandahar Province from wounds suffered from an IED or improvised explosive device. Members, our sympathy go out to Specialist Wilfert's parents, Jeff and Lori, who reside in Rosemount, and to all of his family and friends. So members, if I could indulge and ask for a moment of silence to recognize Specialist Andrew Wilfert's ultimate sacrifice.
Thank you. Are there any further announcements?
Madam President.
Who am I? Senator Gimsey.
Madam President, and for members of the Transportation Committee, today's hearing has also been canceled, and we will resume again on Monday at 1 o'clock. Thank you.
If there are no further announcements, without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Magnus and Senator Hall all day. Senator Langseth from 11:45 to the end. Senator Berglum from at 1 p.m. to the end. And Senator Senjum from 1:15 to the end. Is there no further the business being completed for the day? Declare this. Do you have to make
thank
a motion to adjourn?
Madam President. Senator, yes, as always, members, thank you for your time, attention, and good hard work today. I would like to move that we would adjourn until Monday, March 7th at 11 a.m.
The Senate is adjourned. That's it? Oh, I'm sorry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion does prevail. The Senate is adjourned. My apologies.